So there's all three commissioners. So I'm going to call our meeting to order on this June 3rd. And how we always start, we got to approve the minutes. So is there a motion to approve the minutes?
I so move.
I'll second.
Thank you. Any friendly amendments, question about the minutes? See none. All those in favor of approving the minutes say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh.
Aye, John.
The minutes are approved. Then the next item is approving the loan portfolio today. And there were a lot of loans, Rich, that I saw. We had, 15 loans at a little over $14.5 million. And there seems to be a firefighter theme with some of these loans as well. But I moved to approve the loans. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thanks, John. Rich, we will turn it over to you to walk through the 15 loans that we're reviewing today.
Thanks, Sarah. There are a lot of loans, but there's also a nice variety today, you know, with loans for buildings that include town halls and fire department buildings, vehicles including tractors and fire trucks, road work, and then some other infrastructure. But I'd like to focus on a few of these loans, including loan number 2, which is for the town of Pleasant Springs in Dane County, which is borrowing $415,000 for road work. This loan is notable because Pleasant Springs is a regular annual borrower for local projects, and they tend to pay off these loans in short order using 2-year loan terms. To me, this sounds like a pretty good strategy for towns to keep ahead of the curve on local road maintenance. Then if we move to loan number 7, the city of Schulzburg in Lafayette County is borrowing $700,000 to finance a pass-through loan to the local housing authority for construction of low-income senior housing. This loan is notable for 2 reasons. First, you know, housing authorities are not an approved borrower for BCPL, so the city is borrowing money on behalf of the housing authority and passing those funds through. There's an intergovernmental agreement then for P&I repayment to come from the housing authority back through the city and then on to BCPL. In addition, there's a good possibility that in the end, the housing authority may not need to draw on this loan, as the housing authority may be able to obtain needed funds from other sources. Generally, BCPL does not like to issue loan commitments that the borrower might keep in their back pocket. But in this case, you know, the BCPL commitment was necessary to show that funding would be available to get a good project off the ground if these other sources failed to come through. Moving on to loan number 9, the town of Gibraltar in Door County is borrowing funds for a broadband infrastructure project. Gibraltar is now the most recent community in Door County to invest in high-speed internet for the residents. And this is the 7th loan that BCPL has made to help finance broadband in Door County. Then in loan number 10, the town of Lucas is borrowing $1.2 million for road work under the state LRIP, Local Road Improvement Program. Lucas is expecting reimbursement of 50% of eligible project costs from the state paid at the end of the project. Under the LRIP program, towns are required to pay for the entire project costs up front prior to reimbursement. Only after the project is fully completed, state road funds are then paid to the borrower, which will use them to make a prepayment on the BCPL loan. Then moving on to loan number 11, the town of Grover in Marinette County is borrowing $2 million for road work under the ARIP program, which stands for the Agricultural Road Improvement Program, which we've talked about briefly before. This program reimburses towns for up to 90% of the cost. Because ARIP grants are paid on a quarterly basis during the construction process rather than the LRIP program, which only pays at the end of the project, towns lucky enough to be awarded ARIP grants will not need to borrow the total amount of the project from BCPL. They just need to borrow enough money to pay the first construction invoice, plus a reasonable contingency amount. The state reimbursement will then provide funds for the second invoice, and so on. That's all I have for today, other than to say we still have about 20 loan applications in various stages of approval, so we can expect an elevated number of loans to be ready for board approval at the next few meetings. Are there any questions?
One quick comment, Rich. when I was asked to come down to Darlington, because a couple people were talking about financing some of these housing projects. And after talking about it, the mayor from Schulzburg goes, "I've been around here for quite a while. I've never heard of you guys." I'm like, well, unfortunately, we don't have a big promotion and PR staff here, but we're happy to help in any way you can. And it was amazing how much just, you know, that physical contact can change things. There was a time when Rich and I showed up in Barron, Wisconsin, to a small meeting of treasurers from local municipalities. And it was a nice little meeting. And afterwards, it was amazing how many loans come out of that. So there are times that Rich and I will talk about the fact is our program is structured in a way that we bring the financial markets to the communities, especially ones that tend to be located away from major financial markets. So thanks for all that work, Rich. You're still on mute, Sarah.
Any other questions from the commissioners? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving our loan portfolio today, say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh.
Aye, John.
The loans are approved. And we have no old business, but we do have new business, which is proposed changes to the investment policy statement, the IPS. And so if there is no objection, I'd like to suspend the rules and turn it back over to Rich, who can walk us through the changes that have made with the asset allocation for our investment policy statement.
Thanks, Sarah.
Right. Rich.
You know, I have talked in the past at length about the substantial growth in distributions to beneficiaries over the past several years. You know, over the past 4 years, we have gone from $40.6 million to $70 million in annual distributions. This growth was primarily due to an increase in the average yield that we were able to generate by the portfolio as funds were invested in higher yielding assets such as private debt. I've also spoke about how as we get closer to our target allocations, we will no longer be able to generate that same level of growth going forward. However, our core mission, you know, remains the same. We are to maintain significant, stable, and sustainable distributions to our beneficiaries. The long-term investment goal, as outlined in our investment policy, is to increase fund principal and annual distributions at or above the long-term rate of inflation. Because we're unlikely to be able to continue increasing our average yield in the portfolio over the long term and fund growth from fines and forfeitures and unclaimed property remain volatile and under pressure, the investment committee has determined that it is in the best interest of our beneficiaries to shift the common school fund asset allocation slightly to achieve a higher expected total return and greater potential through long-term capital gains. Several months ago, I engaged the BlackRock quant team to help develop an analysis of several possible scenarios or changes to the model asset allocation. The result of the BlackRock study, completed in April, was a shift in the allocation, as shown on the next page in the packet for today's meeting, which would increase the expected annual return by well over 1% over the next 10 years. This increase in growth would allow fund assets to increase by an extra $300 million over these next 10 years. However, to be fair, this growth does come at a cost. Since investment returns must come as either growth or income, shifting assets to a higher growth model will tend to reduce the average yield generated by the portfolio. Projections are that annual income produced by the Common School Fund will be reduced by approximately $1 million from the current target allocation, but will remain above the $70 million distributed in April of this year. But remember that over the past several years, we have also created a smoothing fund that now holds over $40 million. This is more than $14 million above the minimum amount set within the investment policy. These monies are available to supplement future distributions if the transition to a higher growth model creates a temporary shortfall. But my predictions are that we'll be able to increase distributions by nearly $3 million per year while still maintaining the smoothing fund at the required levels. Of course, you know, projections are only estimates, and nobody knows what the future holds for financial markets. But the BCPL has two strong advantages when compared to other investors. We have a very long investment horizon, and daily volatility in asset prices means very little to us. Our risk measure is not the potential increase or decrease in stock or other asset prices, but the possibility that our beneficiaries might not be able to keep up with inflation. In addition, we are prudent. The investment committee does not make decisions lightly, and we do not need to meet target allocations tomorrow. Our plan would be to transition to the new model prudently as opportunities present themselves. That's all I have for the Common School Fund. Are there any questions about the allocation model?
I have a general question, but it's not about the school fund specifically. So I'm happy to save that for the end if you have more, Rich.
I was going to talk about the normal school fund too. So is it a general question or is it specific to the Common School Fund?
Nope, it's general. So I'll wait.
Okay. Yeah, we can, you know, and I don't have a whole lot to say about the normal school fund, but my main concern has always been the concentration in that portfolio. You know, this concentration was really a function of the size of the fund. When the prior allocations were developed, we believe that diversification in the normal school fund would be difficult because of the minimum commitment size required for many of the investment funds. But we now find that that's not a big problem. If we make a sizable commitment through the common school fund, we can piggyback a smaller commitment with the normal school fund and increase diversification. I was able to develop a target allocation that increases diversification and reduces risk within the normal school fund portfolio, but maintains the expected return and distribution profiles of the fund. Beneficiaries will continue to receive record distributions. The fund should grow a little faster, and this will be accomplished at a slightly lower risk. And that's all I have to say about the normal school fund, if there's any questions specific to that allocation. If not, Josh, what do you want to talk about?
My question was actually for Tom. The question I had on this is just the issue that we talked about at the last meeting that you raised. Does that implicate this at all? I ask because I haven't had a chance to follow up on that yet the way I would like to. So I just was trying to figure out if this is completely distinct or if they overlap.
Tom, you're on mute.
Little bit of an overlap, but the point of it is that the Constitution clearly gives the legislature the power to make the decisions on what we can invest in. And that power does not appear to be limited or have any restrictive language. It just gives the legislature the power to do that. And so if the legislature has the power to allow us to invest in investment funds that pay us net earnings as opposed to gross earnings. And a lot of the funds do. And in essence, they keep their management fees, their fund fees out before they make a payment to us. Then it seems a little bit weird that they would that there would be this concern that we couldn't have our operating budget paid out of the gross earnings. And so when we made the move years ago to program revenue, they put in place these statutes that said that the earnings of the funds do not include those monies that we spend on expenses of managing the assets. And so when we encountered this issue of going back to GPR back in 2019, they actually moved the budget appropriation and stripped out those statutes. But the governor vetoed the statutory move, because by taking away those statutes, it would have created an issue for us to invest in these type of funds. But with those statutes in place, I believe that it's fine for us to invest in these funds. When Ledge Council was looking at it, you could tell that they were grappling with this issue of like, wait a minute, so it's okay for the legislature to authorize you to invest in these funds, which may have fees well above your $1.6 million in operating expenses, and that's fine. But you can't fund the agency out of some of the earnings. And so, in essence, Ledge Council was taking a position that was contradictory in nature. So
to be clear, we have clear statutory authority for these investments, it sounds like.
At this point in time, yes.
Okay. And that makes sense. And they're consistent with the types of investments we made before.
Yeah, like I said, we were making these investments. We started this essentially in 2017, I believe, was the first time we started making some of these private investment fund investments.
Okay, that answered my question.
Any other questions for Rich? Seeing none, is there a motion to approve the proposed changes to the investment policy?
I so move.
I'll second.
All right. Any other questions, comments, or debate? I just want to say, Rich, thank you for your work on this. We know that we've talked a lot about this over the last few months in the investment committee, and so it's great to see this before the committee or before the commission today. So really appreciate all that. All those in favor of approving the proposed changes to the IPS, say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh.
Aye, John.
The changes are approved. So thank you, Rich and Tom. There's no other items on the agenda for new business, so we'll move right into reports. So, Rich, the floor is back to you for your chief financial officer report or investment officer report.
I have nothing further for today. Thanks, Sarah.
Tom, the executive secretary's report.
Thanks, Sarah. Well, our investment policy not only contains asset allocations, but it also contains formulas for target distributions for our trust funds. And those targets are equal to the average net income for those funds for the last 5 years. And as Rich pointed out, our funds have been earning more. And as they've been earning more, we've been authorizing distributions above our target numbers as the growth in earnings appear to be sustainable. And as Rich pointed out, our smoothing funds contained more than the targeted amount. This year, we're planning on distributing $1.8 million from the normal school fund to the UW. That's a 12.5% increase over last year's record $1.6 million distribution. And that $200,000 increase equates to 40 more $5,000 scholarships for UW students through the Merit Scholars Program. So hats off to staff for another good year. And it's great to see that the growth in those distributions here has, like I know I've pointed out a number of times, that years ago, the number of monies that came out of the normal school fund of the UW was zero. So to get from zero to $1.8 million, it's a great track record. Any questions about that? Well, as everybody here knows, the Joint Finance Committee is still working on budget requests, and specifically BCPL's budget requests. We've had ongoing constructive conversations with a number of JFC members, And Senator Bradley and Representative Hurd have agreed to introduce motions to grant at least some of BCPL's funding requests. As everybody knows, the budget is still in a state of flux at this point. The good thing is that we're more involved in the discussions this year, as the change in JFC membership has created an opportunity to engage on a deeper level than in past years. We don't know what the end result is going to be, but we're more hopeful than we've been in a while. Next point, our Lake Tom staff released invitations to bid on timber sales on close to 750 acres of land today, with minimum bids set at a total of over $500,000. We offer sales at least twice a year, and we've been increasing the acreage for these sales as we move forward with our efforts to increase the timber revenue for our trust funds while still managing those lands sustainably. As I pointed out a couple meetings ago, well, for the first time in well over a decade, someone is seeking a submerged logging permit. In essence, the right to pull up logs from the bottom of certain lakes. I always marvel at the fact that it seems like BCPL is the repository of all kinds of ancillary responsibilities, and issuing submerged logging permits is another one of those. But a lot has changed since that last permit was granted years ago, and our staff has been going through what those policies and procedures look like, and we will be asking the board at a future meeting to approve our recommended policy and procedural changes. And speaking of unusual responsibilities, we're finishing up work on a submerged lake bed lease that we will ask the board to consider and approve at an upcoming board meeting. Lastly, I will be off for a day or two next week, having some minor surgery to address some skin cancer. And other than scaring young children for a while, I don't anticipate any other lingering side effects. So that's my report for today. Any questions?
No, just we hope everything's okay, Tom.
Yeah, thanks for the report, Tom, and we hope everything goes really smoothly. If only you could have scheduled it around Halloween, you know?
So I had scheduled it before, and I've moved it twice because of other work responsibilities, and I'm like, I got to get this done. Good. So. Good.
Well, we will make sure not to bother you, and we're glad that you're getting it done. Any other questions for Tom? Moving on to the board chair's report, and I'm going to be real short and to the point like Rich. I don't have anything to share today. So is there anything else that commissioners would like to see for a future board meeting? Seeing none, is there a motion to adjourn today?
I so move.
I'll second.
Thank you. Any questions, comments? Seeing none, all those in favor of adjourning, say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh.
Aye, John.
Our meeting's adjourned. Thanks, everyone.
Have a good week, everyone.
Take care, guys.